comes from Cardiff and is led by the Reverend Mary Stallard. Here on FM, Book of the Week, Tracy Ann Oberman reads from Eleanor Marx, A Life by Rachel Holmes, which tells the story of Karl Marx's extraordinary daughter. It's 1895 and Eleanor is mourning Engels' death. She's still reeling from his revelation about Freddy Demuth's paternity. Freddy, the son of her childhood nanny, Lenchen, it turns out, is also the son of her own adored father. Meanwhile, she continues in her free love union with the dishonest socialist and would-be playwright Edward Aveling, a source of growing distress.
The legacy from Engels gave her more money than Eleanor had ever commanded. She looked for a house to buy, gave up her poorly paid freelance work, and banked the rest until she had time to think and plan out its management properly. Edward, however, got what he asked for, and considering the money shared, she kept no account on him. Eleanor pounded the streets house hunting. An address caught her eye and made her trek to the suburbs of southeast London. On the 29th of November, 1895, Eleanor signed the purchase and paid £525. A fortnight later, she and Aveling moved in. The semi-detached house was built in the high Gothic Revival style. Four stone gargoyles, winged like vampire bats, kept sentry, and unpruned trees cast shadows over the frontage. Practical Eleanor noticed nothing of these ominous aspects. Discovering Freddy was her half-brother meant Karl Marx was not the father she thought him. Engels' revelation shook the foundations of her life. Building herself some security with bricks and mortar was a phlegmatic reaction, and she immediately named the house The Den. Here she would nest and work from home in a study of her own. Eleanor and Laura quietly made financial provision for Freddy Demuth from the inheritance, and Eleanor's home and heart were always open to him. Diligent swot that she was, Eleanor carefully planned her work on Marx's manuscripts, essays, and letters. She decided also that she would begin compiling materials to write her father's biography, and The Den became the headquarters of her literary operations from the beginning of 1896. Momentously, she decided to employ a domestic servant. She hired Gertrude Gentry, who immediately freed her up to spend long hours in her study. Gertie expressed much interest in the books, journals, and newspapers that overspilled the furniture she was asked to keep clean and tidy. Edward seemed more genial and kinder during 1897. Eleanor, now 43, felt they had at last settled into amicable companionship. He was away a lot, but so was she. There was nothing new in that. Edward's spending took them constantly over budget, but he assured her that the money was being put to good use towards his work with the Social Democratic Foundation. What Eleanor didn't know, however, was that Aveling was now in considerable debt to George Bernard Shaw and many more of her friends. Had she known, she would have instantly settled his debts in full, but Edward had no intention of allowing Eleanor to disperse their capital by repaying bad debts that he could continue to dodge. Eleanor's misperception that she and Edward had finally achieved a firm base for their future could not have been further from the truth. Edward, the consummate actor, was proficient at leading a double life, trusting Eleanor had no idea how completely she was being duped. In January 1897, Aveling, under his theatrical pseudonym Alec Nelson, organised a fundraiser of dramatic entertainment at the Wandsworth Social Hall. Alec Nelson took the lead role, playing opposite Miss Eva Fry, one of Aveling's students. Eva sang, very prettily, to the evident delight of her co-actor. Their trysts continued intermittently. Edward dined the excited Eva at West End restaurants, and she invited him to go to Shakespeare plays, where she dreamily cast herself as the romantic heroine. Eva wanted a relationship with Edward, But Aveling saw no necessity of giving up all the material benefits of his relationship with Eleanor. On the 8th of June, 1897, Alec Nelson married Eva Fry at the Chelsea Registry Office. Edward Aveling doctored his age, faked his father's name, and borrowed someone else's residential address on the marriage registration. Understandably, the new Mrs. Nelson expected a honeymoon. The following week, on the 19th of June, Aveling set off, ostensibly alone, to convalesce from his recurrent abscesses and kidney problems at the Kent seaside. He was there, with his new bride, for a fortnight. Revived and jaunty, Aveling returned to London to attend the annual Congress of the Social Democratic Foundation with Eleanor. Sometime in late August, he walked out of the den without explanation, pocketing all the cash, money orders, and movable valuables he could find. Edward refused to offer any explanation. Eleanor turned to Freddie Daymut for help. Shocked and confused, she asked Freddie to try and find Edward. Edward was not to be found. 48 sleepless hours later, Eleanor received a note in the Morning Post. "She'll be home early tomorrow." Her emotional reaction to be at home that day for Edward's return was one of the worst decisions of her life. She still responded to an unwritten bond of love towards Aveling and their relationship that he had long since abandoned. Eleanor wrote to Freddie, describing Edward's return. "Edward seemed surprised and quite offended that I did not rush into his arms. He has so far made no apology and offered no explanation." Aveling didn't need to say anything. He'd already won the game. Eleanor had let him back into the house. It can only have been property and his legal position that brought Aveling back. Edward had independently been in touch with Cross, Eleanor's lawyer. Whatever transpired between him and Cross in those fraught few days, Aveling quickly discovered that he stood to lose all his material interests in the relationship with Eleanor unless they came to a mutual agreement. Within a few hours of that terrible afternoon, Eleanor understood clearly that Edward had not come back for her, but for her money, and a deal that they would be friends in public as they moved in the same circles. Eleanor still did not know that Aveling had recently married his mistress of several years. Whatever compromise they reached enabled Edward to continue to base himself at the den with Eleanor and, without her knowledge, maintain his double life with his new wife. In January 1898, the old kidney disease had returned. He was impatient and in a foul temper. Eleanor put it down to his illness, which he persuaded her was probably fatal. In February, Edward went to London, ostensibly for medical consultations. She told Freddie, "Edward would not let me go with him. That is sheer cruelty, and there are things he does not want to tell me. Dear Freddie, you have your son. I have nothing, and I see nothing worth living for." 2 days later, Edward was admitted to University College Hospital for surgery. 24 hours later, it was clear that, though weak, he would survive. Eleanor brought Edward home to the den by carriage, the most expensive conveyance possible. Eleanor felt the financial pressures were now overwhelming. She confessed that her current expenses were enormous. Doctors, chemist bills and bath chairs all added to the costs of the den. For the first time, Eleanor was counting the financial cost of having Edward in her life. Aveling continued to shuffle, determined to break her. He needed her money for his new marriage, and Eva Nelson, understandably, was impatient. Sometime between Sunday the 27th of March and the morning of Thursday the 31st of March, Eleanor discovered that Edward had married another woman. No record survives of how she found out. On the morning of Thursday the 31st of March, Gertrude Gentry heard Eleanor and Edward arguing. Aveling said he was going to London. Shortly before 10 a.m., Eleanor called Gertie to her study and asked her to run an errand. She gave her an envelope to take to the pharmacy nearby. Sealed inside the envelope was a script reading, "Please give bearer chloroform and small quantity of prussic acid for dog." The prescription was initialled EA, and Edward Aveling's card was clipped to the corner of the note. Gertie returned to the den with a packet and the poison book for signature. Needing a signature for the poison book was not unusual. Aveling often needed strong medicines. Aveling was still in the house when Gertie left once again to return the poison book. When she returned to the den, the house was silent. Gertie sensed something was terribly wrong. She found Eleanor in bed, motionless. Her long, dark hair was loose, her eyes fixed open. Eleanor Marks was dead. And where was Edward Aveling? The inquest inquired into Aveling's movements on the day of Eleanor's death. Gertrude Gentry was clear that Aveling was in the house when she returned from her errand to the pharmacy. Aveling said Gertie was mistaken. He was adamant that he'd already left for London. Aveling's family were convinced from the moment they heard the news that Edward had murdered Eleanor by engineering her suicide. It is certain that on the morning of Eleanor's death, Aveling caught the train from Sydenham to London Bridge and arrived at the offices of the Social Democratic Foundation about 11 a.m. At this stage, no one knew about Alec Nelson's marriage to Eva Fry. This only emerged later, after Eleanor's inheritance had been paid out to him. His share of the estate included, in his lifetime, the royalties from Karl Marx's literary works. The coroner's court returned a verdict of suicide by swallowing prussic acid at the time labouring under mental derangement. On Tuesday, the 5th of April, 1898, a large crowd of mourners gathered at the Necropolis station in Waterloo. Eleanor's coffin and train hearse carriage was heaped with wreaths, many of red roses, as it made its way to Woking Crematorium. There were specially stitched banners from the Union of Gas Workers and General Labourers and many other socialist organisations. There was outrage at the verdict of the inquest, which did nothing except establish the fact of suicide. By the end of April, 3 weeks after her death, Eleanor's friends, family, political allies and the press were alleging that Aveling was a murderer, thief and fraud, and that he should be brought to criminal trial. If Aveling hadn't died 4 months after Eleanor of his old kidney disease, they would have brought a civil case against him. Not a single member of Aveling's family or representative of the socialist movement attended his cremation. Aveling failed to collect Eleanor's ashes from Woking Crematorium, so they were taken to the Social Democratic Foundation offices on Maiden Lane, where they remained in a glass-fronted cupboard for 23 years. When the Marx Memorial Library in Clerkenwell Green was opened in 1933, Eleanor's ashes were placed prominently on a bookshelf in the Lenin Room. In 1956, the family grave of Karl and Jenny Marx and Lenchen in Highgate Cemetery was exhumed. Their remains were reinterred in a monumental new tomb, and the urn containing Eleanor's ashes finally buried with them.
Tracy Ann Oberman was reading from Eleanor Marx, A Life by Rachel Holmes. The abridger was Julian Wilkinson and the producer was Elizabeth Allard.
We celebrate the new run of Poetry Please with a veritable feast. There's fruit. Blackberry picking by Seamus Heaney. Something substantial to get your teeth into. Bread by Brendan Kennelly. And A Jar of Honey by Jacob Polly. Join the audience at the Bristol Food Connections Festival with readers John Telfer, Katie Sobey and James Fleet. That's Poetry Please with me, Roger McGough, Sunday afternoon at 4:30 here on BBC Radio 4.